the case. Yunmen said, I don't ask you about before the 15th day. Try to say something about after the 15th day. Yunmen himself answered for everyone. Every day is a good day. End the verse. He throws away one, picks up seven. Above, below, and in the four directions, there is no comparison. Placidly walking along, he treads down the sound of the flowing stream. His relaxed gaze descries the tracks of flying birds. The grasses grow thick. The mist overhangs. Round Subudi's cliff, the flowers make a mess. I snap my fingers. How lamentable is Shunyata. Don't make a move. If you move, 30 blows. So I've been grooving on this note that showed up in James and David's talk yesterday. This, oh, sweetie. Oh, sweetie. And both sides of it. This, oh, sweetie, congratulations. Good for you. Because there is joy. There is gratitude. There is love. Oh, sweetie, congratulations. And this other one. Oh, sweetie. It's like this sometimes, isn't it? You can feel Kuan Yin finding us on the dark and broken roads. Oh, sweetie. It's like this sometimes. Sometimes we get sick. Sometimes we stay sick. Oh, sweetie. And of course, we, as the Five Remembrances, Five Reminders us, we grow old. You know, you have those moments. I hurt myself sleeping. What the hell? Oh, sweetie. Also in one of the readings in our sutra book, when it's time to die, just die. This can be, you know, death. Or in this pinpoint, razor sharp moment, let go and attain stability. And so whatever it is for each one of us, the bright moments, the dark moments, and when it is bright, it is bright. No need to go looking for the dark. Roll in rapture. And when it is dark, it is dark. Maybe not scramble about, so frantically. So I don't ask about before the 15th day. Can you say a word about after? And we say that this, that what the teacher is asking about here is about before and after awakening, before and after enlightenment, as though it were this one thunderous event. Kapow! Oh, and now it's after the 15th. And Yunmen says, every day is a good day. And again, in this pinpoint, razor-sharp moment, there are moments when we are lost. One moment following the breath, and the next moment heavily sedated. Lost in the anesthesia of thought and memory, worry, I wish I could say the 10,000 things, but it's more like the 6 things that our minds do over and over and over again. But what about after the 15th? These blessed moments of grace when beyond our own willpower, grace visits us and we wake up. Oh, I haven't been following my breath. I haven't been here. Here I am. A real moment of actually being awake. So let go. And attain stability. What about right now? And as we wake up to this moment, however it is manifesting, pleasant, unpleasant, delighted, grieving, bright, muddled, vigorous, sleepy, greedy, hating it. Let go and attain stability in this moment. Just being this moment. The teacher says, be with that just as that. Be with this just as this. But maybe we can take the with out. Be that just as that. Be this just as this. Though the I weaves itself, the small self weaves itself through so many moments, maybe not always necessary. Is it possible in this moment when we let go after the 15th? to just be here. To let here be everything. Regardless of what it is made of. Great delight, great despair. Oh, sweetie. Every day is a good day. It's like this sometimes, isn't it? Thank you. Melissa will take her turn.
So I think most of you know, based on what we said yesterday, that this was James Cordova's first Teisho from the high seat. And the traditional topic is this koan. So we now get to call him Sensei. This is something we discovered today in the officers' meeting. We used to call the two Jameses Evil James and Good James, and they would exchange that title, so we never quite knew who we were talking about. Now we can say James Roshi and James Sensei, at least for a little while. This koan, having heard it explicated by my three colleagues here, and for some reason it snagged the mind of a number of people in the last month here at the temple, including myself. It's so wonderful to visit a koan that seems so familiar and discover something new in it, and listening to James Sensei just now and James Roshi yesterday and David Roshi yesterday, I had more and more of a feeling of sinking into a kind of a warm bath of clarity and perception about this koan. We think that we pass koans, but really we don't. Koans live inside of us and continue to open themselves to us, which could be said as well about the world. And this morning, hearing James talk about, oh, sweetie, I think about the benevolence of this universe, which is not that apparent when we get in the mind of good and bad, right and wrong, gain and loss. And wondered for the first time just about 5 minutes ago if Yunmen was pointing at something else here, something that we've all touched upon, but I just want to drag it out and raise it up and see if we salute it. Just before the election, actually a year ago, I should say, a cousin of mine gave me a subscription to New York Magazine, a very strange magazine for anyone who's ever seen it, pretty left-leaning, very New York-centered, very different from The New Yorker, which I'm addicted to and have been since I was 20 years old. And I learned to skim through it and find little nuggets and jewels in this magazine, really of pop culture and current political thought. And a couple of days before the election, the New York Magazine came out and it had a horrible looking picture of Donald Trump on the cover. And plastered across his face was the word loser. And I thought to myself, whoa, I don't know if that's going to be true. What would happen if Hillary Clinton lost? That'll never happen. And then when the next issue arrived, there was an apology from the editors of New York Magazine. But I had spent 2 weeks, because this magazine comes out every 2 weeks, using that cover as a koan. What they said was that they used the word because Donald Trump used it so much himself in referring to other people. And I realized that what they were pointing to, like good Zen masters, was the danger of being caught in loss and gain. If we talk about others as losers and ourselves as heroes in any story, we are dividing our hearts against themselves. And I wonder if Yun Men is pointing to something similar here. It's a come on. I don't know if you've noticed this about Zen teachers, but they sometimes ask you things that don't make any sense, and you kind of want to hit them. And most of you hold back from that. Thank you very much. And also, we have the sticks. You could, well, I'm not going to go there. But what if Yun Men was saying, I'm not asking you about before you're enlightened, but I'm asking you about after, setting a trap for you. And what if, and I think that all three of my colleagues have actually pointed to this, what if every day is a good day refers to both before and after awakening? It's the feeling of, oh, sweetie. It's the feeling of, oh, you gained some weight. Oh, sweetie. Oh, you lost some weight. Oh, same response. Because this is how human beings roll. Continually appearing to gain and lose, continually having awakening experiences and then getting caught again in delusion and division. This is how it works. Nothing final until the very last moment of our lives. And even then, who knows? So this question of being caught in gain and loss, another famous koan where a Zen master asks two monks to roll up the blinds and they do it exactly the same, and the teacher says, one gains, one loses. If we're a person of right and wrong, a loser and a winner, a person of yes and no and good and bad, then we will get caught in these moments. We want to be the winners. If we're losing weight, we want to be the losers. We want something to solidify and be reliable. But the one who drives us, the one who speaks for us, the one who walks in the woods and decries the tracks of flying birds and sees the grass growing, that one is beyond any of these petty things. As James was saying just now, that one enters the moment and finds goodness in it. Goodness not in the sense of having an opposite called bad, but something beyond good and bad, which is just this. This is the stability that arises in this allowing, this letting. Letting things be the way they are means that we can open our hearts to the moment and not miss this only life we get. When great suffering is arising around us, we can then move forward with that same impulse of love, not more division. Sometimes that love takes the form of great fierceness. We see someone hurting someone else, and we say with great love, stop that. Don't you see what you're doing? In order to do that, we have to see that we could be that one who's doing the harm. We have to see it thoroughly, because all of us are continually going in and out, good and bad, right and wrong, harm and solace. To be able to live in this world, we have to be able to open to everything and see that that is the Buddha nature manifesting. Being sick is the Buddha nature manifesting. Not knowing the answer to a koan is the Buddha nature manifesting. Taking a walk in the woods, getting drenched in the rain, being hungry and tired and sick, being angry and sad and confused, being happy and blissful, all of this is this awakened nature finding a way to manifest itself. It just does this naturally. It's all that we can ever know of what is beyond our meager human understanding, recognizing everything as this great mystery that we call awakened nature or Buddha nature. So we go along our way and we find ourselves getting caught. Is it before or after? Is it gain or loss? What is it right now? Yunmen asked the assembly, "I don't ask about before the 15th. Tell me something about after." And no one could respond. So he himself responded. Every day, every moment is sufficient unto itself. Every day is a good day. Thank you. And now no more teachings. But please make yourselves comfortable. And people behind the fireplace, feel free to come anywhere you like in the Zendo so you can see and be seen. There's plenty of room in the aisles.
James, I want to thank you not just for
just hold on one second, Alan, until everybody's settled.
James, I wanted to thank you not just for the beautiful talk, but for reading us the verse, which I had heard the koan many times, but I never heard the verse before. And I was just loving the verse, and then, you know, goes to that place where don't make a move. If you move, you get 30 blows. And I was so struck by that, you know. And already yesterday, I was thinking about how we keep, you know, we always want to pivot. We keep thinking there's a move to make. And then you get to a place where you realize that any step is going to be right in the shit. and you can't, and it reminded me, too, of a verse in one of our sutras, which is, you know, at the end, you it's like an iron wall. And the first time we recited that, I thought, oh, that's bad. And then eventually, after about 50 repetitions, I thought, no, that's what you want. You want the iron wall. You want not to be able to make a move. But I wanted you to speak from that iron wall.
For me, it's sort of the infinite regress, like that. That, you know, you step to the left and you step in the shit and there you are. That's it too, right? Well, so now, but it's the, and the embodiment of it is, you know, how we struggle, you know, how much we actually just carry in our muscles that extra effort. And hey, when you're in the shit, you're in the shit, right? This every day is a good day offers some opportunity to rest. And so, you know, that iron wall, right, is that it's this place of great faith. You know, can't throw ourselves off the path. Thanks, Dad.
That was an absolutely exquisite call from both of you. And what came through to me, you know, when you talk about saying, oh, sweetie, in both ways, you know, congratulations and oh, you poor thing, is the one true thing, the absolute one true thing is compassion. And as long as we act from that place towards others as well as towards ourselves when we're in a ship, that's the thing we can always rely on, is that compassion is always there, always available to us. And when we don't know what to do, that's where we look.
I think we were pointing to that in the talk, right? And then we have to be careful here. I agree with you completely. And there's a way of trying to be compassionate that's very different from genuine compassion. So sometimes we actually have to fall in the mud and be angry and mean and terrible in order to find that it's the compassion that, again, doesn't have an opposite.
Right.
A compassion that doesn't have meanness as its opposite, or cruelty as its opposite, but it's just a natural gesture. You know, the we're not doing it anymore. If we identify as I'm being compassionate now, look at me. And the world, pop culture right now is full of people putting on compassion as a sort of an outfit. And then, you know, challenge them a little bit, it falls away. It's not genuine. So this practice of being present with everything, I think, allows that kind of genuine compassion to grow. And I like to use the word kindness, I use the word love, but kind of a friendliness. What if we were friendly towards our life? That's a different thing. So thank you for saying that. So Mary?
Thank you both, and actually all four of you. I think I realized, you know, you said, James, that thoughts being a anesthesia, and I definitely do that. And as you were speaking, and that phrase, oh, sweetie, I need it because my baseline, I think, or my assumption is the world's a shitty place, and you got to be ready. And even when I start to take the walls down of the fort, I still have the cannons. And even though the cannons don't do me any good, the fact that I have them means that there's something to protect. And this whole sort of presentation you've all made has reminded me, I guess, or maybe pointed out for the first time that, you know, every day is a good day. There is something wondrous about this, but there is a kindness at the heart of it, despite the freaking shit. And the kindness is, oh, but we get to experience it. So thank you for showing me that.
I've often been surprised by just that, right? That at the bottom of the bottom, right? And it seems like it could have been anything. Mm-hmm. But it ends up being compassion.
Mm-hmm.
And this compassion without an opposite, right? That it is, that you don't have to reach for it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, I'm feeling this way. Let me go find me some compassion, mm-hmm. right? It emerges. It is a quality of this allowing, seems to be faithful.
I'm also reminded of the couplet about in the dark there is light, but do not look for that light. Mm-hmm. So this, can we be faithful in the middle of the darkness, however it arises, long enough for something else to appear?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that's the hard thing, and that's the not moving place. So, you know, and of course, move as long as you can. If you can take a step, take a step. And then after a while we see, or something gets through, or we fail and we realize that the source of the compassion is not me. And then of course the whole world shifts when we even catch a glimpse of this.
Yeah. And just to add that the freaking shit is mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. You know, even if we don't ever recognize the compassion and kindness at the root, that maybe is just an idea until it isn't an idea. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That transformation occurs and it's like, oh, wow, this is also life manifesting itself mm-hmm. as freaking shit. Just quote it. Pierce is at his
hand. I can't tell.
It's Pierce.
It's Pierce.
Well, thank you both. I must admit that when I got here yesterday, I wasn't that happy to find that the election had followed me. I realized that we can, as bodhisattvas, attend to our own salvation. That we have to engage with what happens in the world. But it's hard not to regard this place as a kind of refuge from what's been happening. But what you have all said about this koan is really helpful. And I especially Melissa's point about the fact that the master here is offering a trap. He's setting up an opposition. And maybe those monks are kind of smart after all. They don't bite. They will.
Yes.
And then he indicates that it's neither this nor that. And I begin to realize that, during this election year, I indulged in a certain kind of rhetoric. It wasn't public rhetoric, but it was a certain kind of attitude that created a dyad, us versus them. And I began to see, in part because of what you guys have said, that it's time to stop that. It's time to drop that and just let it go, because that's not what's required now. I don't know if it ever was what was required, but now is not the time for it. And I think that, I just like the line that James quoted in regard to compassion. As he said, we don't find it. It finds us. In the dark and broken roads, I just love that line, because it will find us when we most need it, in those dark and broken roads. And that is something that doesn't have an opposite, as you say. That's what I'm going to look for. So thank you for making that clear.
This is where I appreciate Melissa's pointing to the difference between let it or let and let it go. Because for me in that spot, there is something about, oh, my tribal mind, me and everybody else. And to just, okay, there it is. The awaken from discouragement, that sometimes attention is its own action. To just be aware of tribal mind. And that, I think that actually gets us on the road to compassion.
Just to underline that point, let it go has taken on a meaning in modern culture of getting rid of. But the letting is the important part of the word. And so maybe a better phrase would be letting come and go. Because once we bring attention to it, it just naturally moves and comes and goes. So it's really interesting to, I'm thinking, based on what you said, Pierce, we can try and try and try and try, but to know, to have some little faith that we're going to be, that it's going to come to us on the dark and broken roads. This is the preparation for the capacity to receive what comes to us on the dark and broken roads. But then the mind comes in, the me, and says, oh, I'm going to do that. And we go back and forth. But I just want to speak up also for taking refuge in something that isn't the election, or whatever it is that's troubling you, because I happen to know there are other things going on in the world and in people's lives in this room that don't have anything to do with the election, at least directly. And we need to swing back and forth. I've used this word with a number of you. We need to pendulate. We need to be able to comfort ourselves so that we can go back out and do what we need to do. It has to swing. If it gets stuck, that's an interesting place and isn't alive anymore. That's a different kind of stuck than the iron wall. Mm.
I love the Subhuti's Garden of Flowers. It's all big mess. Can you say a little more about that?
I think that's actually like quoting a poem. And you know, it, I guess for me, it's just the "Let me look at us." Just look at us. You know, it's all a big mess.
I remember it's a reference to when Subhuti was had his enlightenment experience. Flowers rained down on him. You know, and so it seems like that would be a great thing. Shueto's saying, it's a mess. You know, like it would seem to be a great thing to receive transmission. We kept saying all night, you could back out now.
And then, sorry, it's too late.
But that's one of my favorite lines too, Carol. I only know it because I researched it when I did another talk on this, and I was just so taken with it. That's what it feels like. Oh, that's great stuff.
Jessica.
I really appreciate everything that's been said, and I'm finding my mind going to a different kind of a place, sort of feeling frustrated with it. But what about complacency? Because sometimes, you know, oh, you're in the shit, oh, sweetie, okay, just stay. And then, or, you know, if you're in the dark, don't look for the light. And so sometimes there's this part of me that's just like, oh, well, what are you going to do? Can't do anything. And, like, shutting down. And maybe it's like Melissa said, you have to go to that place to get out of it. But sometimes I wish it was this way, but it feels like that helplessness comes in, or that complacency. Well, do you just stay in the ship forever? It really will change, or it feels like if I do something, that's not the right thing. I don't do anything that's not going to be finished right and wrong again. So, all kinds of stuff that can help. But thank you.
Anytime.
Kate, what was the phrase you used last night from that you kept turning around? Was it from John Tarrant?
It's always too soon to despair.
And you added...
Louder, please.
Oh, so the phrase that Kate used last night was, it's always... Too soon to despair, and you added another...
It's never too soon.
No, you added another phrase about complacency. Do you remember
yes.
that?
Yeah, so it was... So despair, that place of despair... Oh, God, what did I say?
It was so great.
sure it was.
It was something like what Jess is saying, because
it was the celebration part, complacency, like, oh, you know, we're good now.
Yeah, it's like, so it's good. It's never too soon. It's always too soon to despair, so just, you know, ride with it, which isn't the practice.
Right.
It's much more pointed than that. And just like there's two kinds of compassion, there's two kinds of being with things as they are. There's the kind of pop Buddhist version of it, which is just be with everything as it is. Everything is wonderful. La, 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 la. It's that. It's a misinterpretation of every day is a good day. one of the checking questions that you get when you work on the koan of every day is a good day. So let's say that you were driving in a car and you ran down and killed a small child. Mm-hmm. Is every day a good day? Mm. You know, this is the test, right? So it's not about good and bad. It's about really being with so fully that whether it changes or not doesn't even matter anymore. You get to taste your life. That's a very different thing than just, oh well. Yeah. So we're against la 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 and oh well, but then I'm seeing the division in that too. Sometimes there's a place for that as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think of the Soto and Rinzai aspects of our practice. Mm-hmm. So not as sectarian points of view, but the Soto is appreciation. So when complacency is here, we find our home. We surrender to whatever is here, whatever our opinion. Well, this is the wrong place. Whatever is here, and that's so important. And this other thing you're bringing up is also important. Is some deep intention, not just sitting here like rocks on the ground, but something we want. Something, this matter of life and death, and to clarify and not waste our time, to waste our life, to rouse our energy toward here, not somewhere else. And so not a fixed place here. And to notice, and all of us are trying to, as best we can, follow our practice, which is different than knowing what our practice is and, but what's alive here in this breath? And then we notice, as James said, we wake up lost in thought, lost in complacency. Oh! So thank you for pointing out that uncomfortable place.
Wayne?
I've only heard this case a few times, and sometimes it's in pieces. But what I always do is take it quite literally. The 15th is the 15th of something. Minutes, years, centuries, whatever. So my reaction to it is literal. Yes, after that, what is going to happen now? And before, you said, I'm not asking about before. Well, why aren't you asking about before? Because how can you talk about after without before? Yeah. So I get tangled up in that. And then when I hear the import of the case, I go, yes, but, this is my reaction to it. I said, yes, right, the 15th means that for Yunman, but... this 15th, where you can ignore the past and then have terrible consequences. I don't want to bring up the E word, but
too late.
Just any moment,
enlightenment.
Any moment.
I thought it was evil.
Any 15th. The past is critical, and we're doing a lot of ignoring of the past now, and there are lots of things that have happened to us recently that have thrown people off kilter, but we've been through that before, and many people have been through that before, so if we blink and fall asleep and lose that past, we can't make choices. We can't step out from that 15th.
Well, and I think you're highlighting this trap. We can get trapped into thinking this is that, pay no attention to the past, and I think that's the kind of override that is the near enemy of what we're talking about. So to remember, it's important to remember that included in this moment is everything that has happened up until now. And now what? Which is very different from ignoring, saying, you know, it's what Melissa was saying. Oh, the present moment is so lovely. Mm-hmm. Don't worry. And yes, we should be worried. We should have our eyes open. We should include everything. Not make this line about this and that. Include, don't include. So thank you for mentioning that.
So much shit has come up in this. You know, it sounds sort of like perhaps you've stepped into it. I find myself surrounded by cornfields now. And, you know, in the spring, I go driving down to work, and I'll roll the window down, and there'll be this blast of cow shit. And it's actually pleasant. You know, it's one of these things that's earthy and rich and warm. And
are you talking about just about the smell?
I would bet you could roll around. It's good. And then you get half a mile down, there's another cornfield, and that farmer has chosen pig shit. And that is the rankest. chickens worse.
Connoisseurs here.
Absolutely. My wife grew up on chickens. Sorry. So, you know, it struck me that it's kind of like every shit is good shit.
A wonderful translation. Every shit is good shit. Thanks. Thank
That's
you.
Some good shit.
One of the jobs of the teacher of the day is to decide when we're done.
Let's take a couple more.